Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 90.
This week on the podcast, the bipartisan budget deal draws enough criticism from both parties to pass the House going away.
And you really get what you pay for in South Africa when it comes to sign language interpreters.
Colorado residents should no longer expect staying alive to be one of the perks of living near all that fresh mountain air.
Do you know someone who suffers from affluenza? Get them help immediately before their inevitable crime spree goes unpunished.
Brain Trust Live tells you the future in our segment on the 2016 primaries.
And Megyn Kelly just really needs you to know that Santa Claus is white. Because children!
We've got all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, it's Brent.
And this is Lila. And did you know that you can find our podcast on the internet? You did know, because we say that at the beginning of every single podcast.
I know. So many places.
It's still at www.braintrustlive.com. Yeah. We recommend you check it out. And also find us on Twitter and Facebook. And places.
Yeah, and vote for us. Nominate us for the Stitcher Awards,
God's
people.
Sakes. Nominate us. You can vote once a day.
You should.
Primarily running in the news and politics category. We're not delusional. We're not trying to think that we are going to win the overall category.
No.
There's like 1 trillion podcasts on Stitcher.
We would contend that ours should win that category.
Right. We would definitely contend that.
But
I don't know that others
we're
going
to make a more narrow push for the news
and
politics category.
We're trying to be reasonable
category.
Here. And reasonable is us winning the news and politics category. I think that sounds
more than reasonable.
Totally fair.
So help us.
Yeah. Just a little voting exercise.
Check our Facebook page. We've been annoyingly asking you to do it every day. So if you need the link.
It's right there.
It's more a lot of places. Yeah.
It's on our Facebook pages. It's on Twitter. It's basically in all the places.
Yeah.
In any case, we have a budget deal.
I know.
Now,
we actually had some
news
this
week.
After
week,
a newsless last week where we sort of just talked about whatever we wanted to. This week, we're sort of... There are things we have to talk about this week.
The budget deal was sort of the biggest news of the week. And it hasn't yet... It passed the House. It hasn't yet passed the Senate.
Right.
The news is getting more pessimistic every day about whether or not it's going to pass the Senate. At first, everyone was like, oh, well, of course it'll pass the Senate. We're not even...
Well,
like,
it's so bizarre because usually you can count on the Senate to be the one that is going to pass it, and then the House to just sort of, like bungle it.
Since when is the House getting deals pushed through that the Senate can't
And it was, like,
pass?
A huge bipartisan deal. It was, like, you know, 300-something to 60, or 332 to 94.
Yeah.
Like, 60 of the voting against were Republicans, I think, or
60 voting against were Republicans, and they were Tea Partiers, and they were voting against it because it doesn't get rid of the federal government, basically. But 160 Democrats voted with them. That's a lot of the 200 Democrats that are in... you know, the House to begin with.
Yeah.
It was kind of, the deal was made by Paul Ryan and Patty Murray, who have a very significant height difference.
Is Patty Murray really short?
She's very short. Well, I didn't realize she was very short,
either.
Nor did I realize that Paul Ryan is really tall. And neither of those things may be true, but they were significantly different heights.
Hmm.
So that's a thing that's happening. It basically cuts $23 billion from the deficit over the next 10 years. The most important thing about it is that it means that we don't have to shut down the government on January 15th, like everyone was planning to.
Yeah, I heard an interview on NPR the other day with an economist, and they were sort of, you know, not necessarily... I think the thing that everybody is sort of happiest about, because it has, you know, issues on the left and on
literally
the right, which we're going to get to, nobody really likes it. But I think the reason why people do like it is because it does sort of avoid a shutdown.
Yeah.
It avoids a lot of things. It sort of like sets a budget. So basically what they were saying is that like now the government is sort of like no longer in the way of the economy, sort of like doing what it's supposed to be doing. I mean, a lot of the reasons that people have said that the economy has not sort of like gone off like, you know, they want it to is because we have to every 3 months have some sort of like ridiculous nonsense thing going
where
on, whether it's a shutdown or whether it's a, you know, fiscal cliff or whatever the hell it is.
Right.
And now we don't have to have that. Even if everybody hates this, we don't have to worry about that happening any longer.
That's basically all there is to say about the deal.
Right.
It doesn't really restore the money that the sequester cut from domestic programs.
No.
It doesn't extend the unemployment insurance that they've been sort of extending this every, you know, every time it comes up because
that's a battle we're going to have pretty
basically
soon.
Basically everyone in the country is unemployed and so everyone is relying on unemployment insurance. Republicans hate it because first of all, they fucking love all of these disaster sequester cliff moments.
They've been
shoving their agenda down our throats in these moments by refusing to cooperate.
Well, and they also love the sequester in general. They don't like that it cut so much out of military spending, but they like that it cut so much money out of everything. So they're not necessarily wanting to, you know, give money back to the sequester cuts. I mean,
And that's sort of this whole thing. This removing this sort of like constant obstacle to getting anything done is removing their biggest bargaining chip,
right?
In the entire, you know, political universe.
Yes,
I said it.
Yep.
But they would like it to include somehow. They're like mad that there's not enough cuts in it, which is always hilarious coming from them, because there's basically mostly cuts in it. It's mostly cuts. That's what's in this budget. Cuts.
Yeah. There are some, and they were also very careful because they knew that their caucus wasn't going to go for, like, new taxes. So there's, like, fees in it. There's, like, a $5 airline ticket fee or something like that. Yeah. You know, it's just sort of like, they really got into some semantics to make sure this thing got passed.
And let me tell you what the difference between taxes and fees are. Fees are fucking regressive.
Yeah.
Taxes, you can do in a progressive manner so that poor people pay a smaller percentage of their income.
Right, a fee, everybody has to
pay. A fee, everyone pays the same amount, and so poor people end up paying a larger percentage of their income towards fees than rich people do.
Right.
So it's really great for rich people.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch of, like, little things also, like, you know, they want to, like, their fraud crackdowns are always a popular choice in these sorts of compromise deals. They're going to have states crack down on overpayments to unemployment benefits and that sort of thing. They put a salary cap on government contractor executives, though. That was interesting.
That. Yeah.
It's $500,000. I would contend it should be less.
Yeah.
But I live in the world. I get it. Doesn't matter, though, how many cuts and other crappy things were shoved down Democrats' throats. Paul Ryan and John Boehner are getting shit from everyone.
Yes.
It is borderline too hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, the reason that people were sort of like starting to think that maybe there's an issue in the Senate is because basically before this, the second that they sort of like announced this deal, Marco Rubio specifically was on fire about it. And he was like, no. And some other, you know, of course,
Rand Paul, obviously.
They're like, you know, working up their sort of loony bin crew to
sort of
like oppose
it. Oh, and Jeff Sessions is pissed because they didn't consult him. He's just, his ego has been bruised. So he's deciding not to cooperate because he's sort of like the equivalent of a Paul Ryan in the Senate. He's on the Senate Budget Committee. And so he wanted to be in the negotiations and got left out. Oh, how sad. In any case, there is also an issue in the Senate because they just changed the filibuster rules. And so now there's a bunch of people who just like don't want to cooperate with anything because they're mad about filibuster reform.
Right.
Like, go Dynawell.
Meanwhile, the filibuster reform is still so,
so
narrow. Like, I was talking to one of my coworker who is a Republican who I sit in an edit bay with all day, basically. When they passed those filibuster rules, he was like, is this something that, do you think that the Democrats are really going to suck up and, like, you know, when it comes their turn to have to, and I was like, yeah, because it's just for, like, lame judgeships and things that, like, it's not for Supreme Court, it's not for anybody. It's like, yeah, the Democrats don't give a flying fuck. They just want to be able to pass a nomination of somebody that is supposed to serve at the president's, you know,
discretion.
Like, it doesn't have anything to do with this budget deal. Like, we can't bypass the filibuster on the budget deal. We can't bypass it on any law.
No.
I mean, it's the weakest, lamest thing ever. So it's like,
super lame.
Why they're so up in arms about it is just sort of like, get over yourselves.
Well, they are getting up. It's an effective strategy for them, getting up in arms
well,
about stuff.
Well, that's true.
It works for them. So that they're just going with it because they can.
Yeah.
Why not?
Right.
The sort of middle range senators on the right are kind of falling in line with the budget deal.
Right.
Like John McCain, I think, is just sort of like, he's now just become a crotchety old man where he's like, I'm sick of these kids and their stupid games.
Yeah.
I just want this fucking thing to pass so that I can just go on sleeping or whatever.
And
I
think, you know, the only reason that it may sort of like get held up would be the potential of a filibuster, but you only need sort of like 60 to break that.
Yeah,
and I just think if you get
after the shutdown, I don't think that there's people to
I know that there are some Democrats who aren't super stoked on this, but I think when it comes down to it, I think they'll all probably fall in line. And then you really only need John McCain and Susan Collins and two or three other people who are not terrible, which do exist, surprisingly. You might think that they don't, but they do.
They're quiet.
right, exactly. But you know, you can find them. You can, you know, they're there.
Knock some heads together.
Someone
can knock some heads
together. So I think I think it will probably pass, but you're right. It's sort of like every day that the reporting
gets more pessimistic, gets like every
more dire.
Like, it began with reports that, like, where no one was even talking about the Senate. They were like, and it's expected to pass the Senate. That's, you know, that's what all the news was saying.
Yeah.
And then, like, a few days later, it was like, well, we're getting some pushback in the Senate. No one really knows. And, like, I was reading the news today, and it was like, no one knows whether this bill can possibly pass in the Senate. It's unclear because no one supports it. And it was like, I was like, oh, boy, we've really turned a page here because this was the Senate's supposed to be the easy part.
I know.
We're not even supposed to be worrying about the Senate.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, though, Paul Ryan and John Boehner have been getting into these, like, hilarious kerfluffles with conservative groups over this.
Yeah.
Because they, the Tea Party is, like, real pissed about this. They hate making a deal of any sort.
Right.
They don't believe in deals.
Yeah.
So, obviously, they're angry. But Boehner has finally just sort of, like, reached his sort of limit.
Yeah.
With it, which has been sort of interesting. There's the Tea Party Patriots sent him a hilarious letter. I mean, the Heritage Foundation was on them, like a whole bunch of like actual think tanks, but you know, think tanks that call them in name. We're on them. The Tea Party Patriots are not a think tank. They're just sort of like a wacko group.
Yeah.
But they sent him a letter saying that he was declaring war on the Tea Party with his quote, smug and pretentious rant against right-wing organizations. Because what happened was, the Heritage Foundation and a bunch of other people came out against this, and Boehner got really pissed with them and like unloaded like a whole bunch of like what seemed like very pent up anger about how he's been put in this position by these loony groups that don't have any sort, you know, that are basically using people to achieve their aims instead of, you know, instead of representing the American people. And when he got asked about it earlier this week by media, his response was, are you kidding me?
Well, right. Well, and that's the thing. I think because the budget, like, when, now that we've sort of like told you what's in this budget deal, the fact that some of these like Tea Party groups are so angry is just so ridiculous, because if you were to ask sort of the people who would claim to be their supporters, like, first off, I'm sure they don't know what's in the deal because they're not paying attention. But second off, if you told them, it's sort of like, there's, this is just such a, it's such a dumb thing to be like getting up in arms about, because it's like, there's nothing there to be angry
about.
They
call Boehner a ruling class politician and a tax and spend liberal at heart,
which
is like, really?
Come on.
Like, stop yourself. That is not even close to what's going on here.
Yeah.
And those words are just, like, making no sense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's been sort of a hilarious back and forth with Boehner, because I think Boehner also maybe has just sort of, like, reached the point where he's kind of a laughingstock of the entire world.
Yeah.
He presided over this dumb government shutdown that he was forced into by a bunch of crazies.
Right.
He's a weakling, so he can't, like, stand up for himself. He cries in public, so he even looks weak. And, like, he has finally reached the point where he's, like, can these people just get off my ass?
Yeah, like, I know.
Which is great. I wish he had reached that point.
He should have.
Years ago.
And we,
but,
you know, advised him that had he reached that point earlier, I think he probably could have ended up being, like, the hero out of that, you know, government shutdown earlier. But he was,
you know, 2 weeks.
He didn't know what to do.
Earlier than the government shutdown actually, you know, ended. I think at least we have some big GOP voice saying that these groups have no credibility, because that was one of the things he said this week, was like, they've just lost all credibility.
Right.
Like the Heritage Foundation, a bunch of the Tea Party groups, a bunch of the, sort of super PAC type groups that organize around these issues, all of them were sort of like on him. And he was finally like, these groups have no credibility. Who are they representing? Like, what is this?
Yeah.
What is this? What are these people up to?
Yeah.
Just go home. And are you kidding me?
That's it.
The words he left us
with.
But if you were concerned that we didn't repeal Obamacare this week because of this, fear not. They are on it. Paul Ryan was on Meet the Press this Sunday. He wants to make sure that we know that the only reason we're clearing up all these budgetary deals is so that we have all the time in the world to deal with repealing Obamacare.
Yeah.
David Gregory was asking him about whether or not they still are going to pursue this anti-Obamacare policy because people are liking it. And David Gregory was talking about, like, some kid who, like, had a pre-existing condition and, like, got coverage and everyone was so happy and, like, told some anecdote that was supposed to warm the cockles of our hearts about, you know, how great Obamacare is. And Paul Ryan was basically said that the GOP does have a plan, that it involves replacing what we have with something that prevents discrimination based on pre-existing conditions, which, like, you can't do without a mandate. Sorry, folks.
Right.
And then, but that wouldn't require a, quote, government takeover, which, can we have the government takeover, please? Because
I know.
What government takeover is he talking about? we have to buy private insurance on this plan.
Yeah, I just don't understand what his plan is, because the only way that that works is if the government is subsidizing those insurance companies, yeah, or if you're doing it on some sort of like Medicare basis for these people with pre-existing conditions, because you can't just tell insurance companies that they can that they have to cover people with and not also force healthy people to get it. That's the whole point of the mandate, which we've said a zillion times.
Right.
Everybody should be getting that at this point, but obviously Paul Ryan himself doesn't even get it.
No.
But this is, I think, like, has, you know, the issues with Obamacare have brought up, I think, some interesting sort of discussions, because I was talking again with the same person that I referenced earlier today, my, you know, Republican coworker who I enjoy a lot. And we were sort of talking about healthcare. We had some, you know, we're getting new healthcare at the beginning of next year. So we were just having a discussion about it. And he said to me, he was like, I sort of just don't get why all of the people who have pre-existing conditions can't just go into a Medicare pool and basically just like be on the Medicare plan that would be provided for people with pre-existing conditions.
Here's the
answer. That's,
neither do we.
We don't understand why that can't be the case either. My jaw about hit the floor because he's absolutely right. But this is, and he is sort of a little more moderate. He's not like a total wingnut.
Right.
And I enjoy political discussions with him. But the fact that the words had come out of his mouth that like more people should be joining up on Medicare because they have pre-existing conditions is just sort of like, I feel like once we get the perception to that point, it's like we're on the highway to Medicare
this is,
for all.
This is no longer a winning argument, needing to get rid of Obamacare. I had a similar situation at work where a coworker of mine who's not, she's not a Republican or anything like that, but she's slightly more conservative than I am, and she said the same thing. We were talking about Obamacare. She was like, I don't like this mandate. I think it's stupid. I don't want to be forced to buy anything by the government. And I was like, well, trying to explain sort of like why it's necessary, whatever. And she was like, I don't understand why they can't just give us all health care. And I was like, well, I don't either. Sorry. I'd like to know myself. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, it's like, that's the next natural step in that discussion, because it just makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make sense for all of these subsidies to go to these companies who are then having to, and like, this plan to like cover people based on pre-existing conditions is already a very new talking point for the Republicans. They were not trying to do that before.
No.
They only are trying to do that now because everyone thinks it's awesome that people with pre-existing conditions can finally get health insurance.
Yeah.
So they're suddenly having to address that issue, which they weren't even having to before. So thanks Obamacare for even bringing that up.
Yeah.
But as I, you know, I was talking about this years ago when this bill passed with my mom and probably with you too. And I was like, you know, I think I don't like this plan sort of on its own merits.
No.
But I think that it will make us all, it'll get us to the point where we realize that everyone really does deserve health care. And once we're at the point where everyone agrees that everyone deserves health care, then we're at the point where we're like, how can we do this the cheapest way possible? Well, and that's when we start talking about single payer seriously.
Well, and that's what I have always said too. And I said to, you know, when I was having this discussion with my coworker, I said to him, I was like, I have always said, and I think that this was, you know, if the Republicans could sort of like coalesce around an idea like this, their attempts to repeal Obamacare would seem less disingenuous.
Yeah.
Because this is sort of the first that we have heard that they have any sort of plan to do anything with anybody with pre-existing conditions.
Well, and the reason that that's the case is because they don't. And he just randomly is saying these words because he knows that suddenly people want that.
Right.
I mean,
and this probably would not pass a Republican House.
No, of course not. They don't care about sick people.
No.
They are sick people, but they don't care about them.
They cheered at a freaking Republican debate last year that you should just let people without insurance die.
Yeah.
So they're not necessarily interested in insuring people, but they're, at least Paul Ryan is pretending. God bless him, I guess.
You've got to start from a place of like people taking certain ideas for granted. So, like, once we agree that everyone deserves an education, then we talk about how we can improve the public schools.
Right.
Currently, we've stopped agreeing that everyone deserves an education. That's why the schools are falling apart.
Well, that's what, isn't it, what's it called, the Overton window or something, basically?
Yes.
Like, the window of, like, what people, like, perceive as, like, even being a reasonable thing to do, sort of. Like, and I think that, like, until, you know, fairly recently, it hasn't even been, like, in the sort of like thoughts that everybody should have healthcare, or that people with pre-existing conditions.
You couldn't take that. You couldn't take for granted that everyone wanted everyone to have healthcare, which is crazy because that's crazy.
Right.
Just, I can't explain why. You should know why. But
right.
I think the evolution of gay marriage has been a good example of this.
Yeah.
For a while, it was really, you know, it was really crazy to even suggest that gays should be like not murdered in the streets, basically.
Right.
But once we're at the point where we agree that, like, you know, marriage is a thing that everyone should have the right to, then we can talk about, like, who specifically we're talking about and how the best way to achieve that is. Like, you can talk about specifics once we agree that it's a thing.
Right,
so in the states where we agree that it's a thing, it's been easy. Because we're just like, oh, now it's a thing. So we can all just go home. Stop worrying about it so much. Right. In the places where they haven't gotten to the point where they think everyone has the right to marry, they're still pulling their hair out about what to do about the scourge of gays that have showed up trying to marry. Like, it's the same type of thing. Like, you just sort of have to, like, you have to agree on the sort of basic premise of the argument before you can discuss the policy.
Right.
And we hadn't, as Americans, even agreed on the basic premise. And what Obamacare does, what the Affordable Care Act does, is it helps us agree that it's a law where suddenly Americans will think, you know what, we all deserve health care.
Right.
We pass this law because we all deserve health care. And once we all agree we all deserve health care,
then
suddenly we got to be like, how can we do this cheaper than this? Because
right.
this is too expensive. And then we can talk about single payer.
Yeah.
That's what we hope.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens. Probably nothing. Also, especially nothing, because while they're busy saving up all this time to repeal Obamacare some more,
they've also saved up some time.
They're
for a debt ceiling battle.
Yeah. They're going to have a retreat over the holidays where they plan to discuss what their next step is in the debt ceiling battle.
Right. And they're going to have it.
Yeah. No.
The next step is not having it.
Let me tell you, if I were them, I would never let this issue go. Because it's a win for them always in that it's a loss. I mean, it's a loss for them in perception.
Right.
But, like, what other leg do they have to stand on for anything? They're only suggesting crackpot crazy ideas at this point.
Yeah.
No one likes them. So
right.
the only thing they have is to hold everyone hostage while they exclaim crackpot nonsense.
While they decide to pay the bills that they themselves
incurred.
That they
racked up. Yeah, exactly.
they're the ones who
can
control spending.
The debt ceiling thing is difficult because you never know when it's going to hit.
Right, like, Jack Lew gets to
Jack
basically
Lew
just decides,
gets
right?
To determine
sort of
when
informs
the moment
everyone.
Is. Yeah. So they don't want to be caught off guard. But if you were thinking that they were clearing the way on this budget discussion and averting government shutdown in order to give up on the debt ceiling, you were wrong about that. We're only 50% of the way there to having a functioning government at all. And I'm using functioning in a very broad way. And then the other big thing that happened this week.
Oh, man.
The Mandela Memorial.
Oh, my gosh.
So much happened.
Yes.
First of all, a lot happened because it was 3 hours long. So there was a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
Huge stadium full of people.
Yeah. It was just basically, it was a big party.
It was a big party.
I mean, it wasn't the actual, this is what, you know, because
we're
going to get to Selfiegate in a little bit, but it wasn't, this was not his funeral.
Right.
This was like 50,000 people in a giant stadium. There were freaking performers. There was like a parade come in the thing or something. I mean, it was a to-do.
Yeah.
It was a spectacle, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, but they, of course, had a sign language interpreter who stood on the stage
like
for the entire time. And, he wasn't actually signing anything.
Not signing sign language words.
Gibberish. He was signing
making
gibberish.
Making hand signals of various sorts.
Yeah.
He was, and a lot has come out about this since. At the time, obviously no one noticed except deaf people. Because
sure.
other people don't necessarily know. And I don't, I mean, I assume that South Africa has a different dialect of sign language than Americans use anyway. I don't think that it was even something that American deaf people would have recognized. Because sign language is not the same everywhere.
Oh, it's not.
It's not. Isn't that weird?
Oh, interesting.
Like, shouldn't it be?
Yeah.
Like, at the point that, like, you might as well. You've invented a language made of hand signals. You might as well just.
But I guess they do say ASL, American Sign Language.
Yeah, American Sign Language,
right?
Language is American.
The American way.
Version.
That's why they call it that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But this guy, and I'm not going to say his name because I don't have any clue how to.
I know. His last name is John Chie,
right.
I think, because
his last name
I've
is John
heard
Chie.
That said. His first
name
is.
Tumsankwa?
Or Tumsanka?
We're definitely. We're maybe
we said
even
we weren't
going to
say it, and then
we tried because it was written there. He apparently sort of, like, has a history of signing random nonsense.
Yeah. So this guy from the DFSA, the Deaf Federation of South Africa, said that he watched a video of John Chie signing at the 100th anniversary celebration of the African National Conference, the ANC. Yeah. And he concluded that there was no sign language used. It was only slapping of hands and movement of arms. But how is this guy still working?
I know.
Still getting work.
Well, maybe because he's cheap. They only paid him $85 to do the full 3-hour Mandela Memorial.
Yeah.
Now, at least in the States, the way that they normally do it is that every 20 minutes a new interpreter comes up because it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's like if you had spent 3 hours, you know, like making a, like listening to a speech in English and like interpreting it in real time in Spanish.
Well, even
that
just,
would be exhausting.
Even just standing for 3 hours.
Just standing
hours
for
and, like,
3 hours is hard. Yeah.
I sang yesterday. I had a concert.
Yes,
and
Brent,
I was
concert, I went.
Stood for like an hour and 20 minutes.
It's exhausting.
And I was going to freaking pass out.
I used to have a problem because I went to this camp where we all had to sing in this chorus together, and we would do this performance at the end of every, you know, every 2 weeks or something like that. And I would find myself on stage yawning repeatedly because I just couldn't stand for that long without feeling exhausted. And then I would yawn sort of without realizing it.
Yeah.
In any case, he not only sort of has this past of fake signing and all of this other nonsense. There was more. He's apparently got a history of schizophrenia.
Right.
And was seeing angels and other things, other visions, in the lead up to the event.
Yeah. He'd been in a mental hospital for a year.
Right.
He has a history of schizophrenia. He was accused of murder.
Yeah.
And when he was doing this interview, basically, after, where he sort of apologized and then, like, gave all these reasons for why he was signing gibberish, they asked him about the murder, and he just got up and left and didn't say anything. But yeah, he was like, claimed that he was seeing angels, and he says that a lot of times when that happens, like, he also, like, then that's when he goes to sort of, like, the violent place.
Right.
And, like, he panics and he sees things chasing him. So, meanwhile, he was standing 3 feet away
from every world leader
who, like, gave up and gave a speech.
Yeah.
So, that's not super great.
So, South Africa, not a place to go if you're hoping that, like, a potential ex-felon, like, schizophrenic is not standing 3 feet from you, pretending to sign to deaf people that don't understand him.
I mean, it's sort of a tragic story, but it also is just sort of, like, there's something that, like, is just so bonkers about, like, the fact that he thought that he could get up there and just, like, wave his arms around in front of, like, that was, like, everyone on the planet was watching that thing. It wasn't as if, like, you know, it wasn't the ANC thing that he was doing.
No, and also, the other thing that I'm wondering is, like, this story came out, like, days later. Was no one watching the first 10 minutes of the thing who speaks sign language and thought, you know what, we gotta pull that guy out of there. He doesn't sign.
Oh, I know, there was no...
Like, there was no oversight at all?
No.
No one even tried. They were like, well, he's doing his thing. We can't interrupt him now.
Like, he's too far in.
Like... And maybe they were just like, well, deaf people won't notice. It'll be fine. Like, they're, you know, it's
right.
It's no big deal.
But they also claimed that it appeared as though he did not know how to sign either Mandela
or thank you.
I know how to sign thank you.
I know.
I think all people know how to sign thank you.
Everybody knows that.
Everybody knows it.
And you would think that in an event memorializing Mandela, that would be a word you'd learn going in. Especially in a country where he was the president. That's
right?
Like being a sign, like an interpreter here and not knowing how to sign Obama, but like Obama plus Clinton plus Reagan plus Ford. That's like not knowing how to sign like the definitive political figure of the last like 50 years.
Yeah.
So that was crazy.
Oh boy.
Then also there was Selfiegate.
Oh my God.
This was sort of poorly timed or not. It was unfortunately timed because as you may or may not know, Selfies at Funerals, a Tumblr devoted to people taking selfies at funerals, had recently become sort of a viral sensation.
Yeah.
So this was on everyone's minds, the appropriateness or inappropriateness of taking selfies at a funeral.
But as we said, this wasn't a funeral.
It wasn't a funeral. It was an event.
They were at an event. But anyway, so you probably saw the picture.
Yeah.
It was,
if you're alive, you saw the picture.
It was President Obama, British Prime Minister David Cameron, and the Danish Prime Minister, L. Thorning-Schmidt. And... I have a lot of questions here that I think need answered. Well, Lyle and I were talking about this earlier in the week, and it was on the Danish Prime Minister's phone.
Yeah.
And before I even knew whose phone it was on, I was like, well, clearly she's to blame here.
Yeah.
Because first off, what is she doing seated next to the two of them?
Why is she between David Cameron and Barack Obama?
The two of them?
And what luck?
Clearly she's... Of the three of them, she would be the one who would need to take a picture on her cell phone because Barack Obama and David Cameron are just, there's never a time where they might not be getting photographed together.
No, exactly. And also, well, like, it's like if I were sitting between the two of them, if it were a fucking funeral,
it's
I wouldn't
photo
care.
Op.
I would take a selfie.
That's a photo
I'm
op.
Not above taking
You're
a selfie.
You're the Danish Prime Minister.
She doesn't have the ear of Barack Obama. She's not meeting him all over town.
She's never going to be in the same, you know, country as them probably ever
exactly.
again.
Exactly.
There's no reason for her to be.
No.
She needed a damn picture.
She needed a picture.
Leave the woman be.
Exactly.
Especially leave Obama be.
Right.
What was he supposed to do? Say no,
like,
don't
no,
take
I'm not
going to
take
with
a picture
me?
With you? That's rude. That's not very diplomatic either.
That's not diplomatic.
That would have been a major diplomatic faux pas.
Yeah.
I was worried that Michelle was committing a diplomatic faux pas. Turns out it was just sort of an inconvenient moment because she was just sort of like watching and not
smiling.
She looks like she's pouting
in
the picture.
She was so disinterested in this picture. Right. Like she couldn't have.
She probably wasn't invited to be in the picture because it was like.
She probably
was. She's not a head of state.
No.
You know? She's the first lady.
Yeah.
That's a different picture.
Yes, exactly.
Thorning-Schmidt's husband could have asked Michelle Obama to be in a picture right. with him.
But, of course, everybody sort of, like, you know, it looked as though she was angry. So everybody, of course, you know, like figured that she was angry.
Jumped on that.
The person who took this picture has said that prior to the picture and after, she was sort of, like, joking and, like, talking to other dignitaries and whatever. And,
yeah,
like,
doing what she does.
You know, but, you know, I think we would both contend that this is the type of event that you can take a selfie at.
Yeah. Also, I would contend that any event where that many heads of state are just, like, hanging out, sitting around. Because the other thing we were discussing on the day that this story broke is that they probably, there was a 3-hour event. There was a lot of downtime, probably.
Well, yeah.
What else were they supposed to do sitting there?
And there were also,
sit and look dour for 3 hours plus?
Well, and there were also, like, a lot of other pictures that weren't necessarily selfies, but were sort of, like, odd groups of people who were, like, smiling and looked like they were having fun. Like, I saw a picture of Bono and George W. Bush,
who were
it wasn't a selfie, but they were sort of like, you know, cheesily posing for the camera, basically. Like,
here's why. It
was an event where you were supposed to be having fun.
Yeah, exactly. It was a commemoration.
Yeah.
It's like a wake. You don't go to the wake and then cry the whole way through your wake. You get drunk and then you have a good time at the wake.
Mm-hmm.
People want people to have good times at their wake.
Yeah.
Because it's mean to make everyone sit and cry over you for 1,000 years and not throw a party.
Right.
So this was the party.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they were standing over his grave.
No.
Like, taking selfies. But also, if I were her and I were standing over anyone's grave at all.
In between the two of them.
Next to Barack Obama and David Cameron, I'd take a fucking selfie. Whatever.
Make a sad face.
Make a sad face in the selfie. It's not the end of the world. If a bunch of high school students are doing it. The Selfies at Funerals site has since said that they've sort of, like, reached the pinnacle. They basically used this. They went off the air. Like, they posted this photo and they were like, well, that's it.
Can't beat it.
Can't beat that, so we're done.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in what is tragic but getting to be exhausting
news, in the school shooting capital of the United States,
right.
Colorado.
There was another school shooting. 15 minutes from Columbine, we're all...
Right.
Why does anyone even go to high school in that area anymore? Like, why is anyone in Denver agreeing to go in public?
I know.
Also, you could get shot anywhere in Denver.
Yeah. And wasn't it the year anniversary this week, too, of
it was, yeah,
Newtown?
It was, like, it was just a day before the one-year anniversary of Sandy Hook.
Or Sandy Hook, right, yeah.
Yeah, that is
Newtown.
Newtown, right,
that's the same. Thank you. Okay.
Sorry. It's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, well, there's too many school shootings
to keep track of.
Which is terrible.
And it wouldn't be inconceivable that those would be two different school shootings, because there's so many.
Well, right, exactly.
Like we said, it's right by Columbine. The shooter shot himself. He was looking for a teacher. He sort of, like, broke into a high school whose name I can't really say that I'm going to say correctly. Arapaho?
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
I did it. Thanks, Native Americans. He went into Arapaho High School and asked for a teacher and then walked all the way through the school. Like, he was halfway into the school, shot two students on the way. I think one of them is in serious condition. The other one was just a minor shooting injury, if that's a thing.
Sure.
And then he shot himself. But, like, guys, like, can we just...
Come on.
This, you know, this was 1 year from Newtown, but there were many shootings in between Newtown and this shooting.
Oh, yeah.
We used to report on them, like, once a week.
Right.
And it's exhausting to report on them so much because we're just having massive shootings left, right, and center all the time. But, I mean, can we just deal with some gun control? And I was saying to Brent earlier, I was like, why are police departments in Denver and in and around Denver, like, even putting up with this anymore? Like, Colorado finally did pass some gun control measures in the last year. But, like, they are put in so much danger regularly by what are spectacular mass shootings.
Yeah.
I don't mean that in the good spectacular in the good way. I just mean in the large way.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, when you have things like Columbine going on and then you have things like Aurora going on, like... Who agrees to be a policeman in that state?
A policeman or a person?
A person?
A resident?
An alive person? Like, who would agree to do any of those things?
Well, you can't necessarily agree to be an alive person in Colorado.
No. By living in Colorado, you're agreeing that you can only try. Yes.
Yeah.
Once you're in Colorado, it seems like you're sort of having a choice forced on you.
Colorado needs to really... We need to send our... gun control ideas that we came up with to the people of Colorado.
We had some constructive ideas.
Hinkenlooper or whatever the
check
governor's
them on our
name
Tumblr
is,
page.
Crazy name.
Hinkenlooper can... Well, he's... Like, what is any elected official in Colorado supposed to be doing at this point? Because it's like, now they all, every time this happens, have to be like, well, this is happening too much. But my hands are tied. There's nothing we can do. Oh, well, sorry. Like, I mean, what... Like, they can't be like, you know what, guys? let's work as a state to get some sort of federal agreement going. We did what we could for the state, but this is, the federal law is affecting the quality of life in Colorado, or the lack of federal law is affecting the quality of life in Colorado. Let's try to do something.
Yep.
Let's call our federal elected officials or something. Let's do something. Yeah. Anything. Really, nothing could be worse than what's going on right now. So anything would help.
Yeah.
In other crime news, if you were wondering what a good way to get away with murder is, just try being rich.
Being rich and white.
Yeah. If you're rich and white, that's pretty much
done.
Done it. Yeah, you've done it. There was a really high profile case with a 16-year-old in Texas who had a drunk driving accident where he basically rammed into a group of people that were all like standing over a parked car and killed them. And his trial happened, or he was sentenced this week, and his defense was that he had, quote, affluenza. He had the, and we've heard this word before, but it's sort of like the tongue-in-cheek term that you use to describe, like, what happens when rich people have no limits and don't know any better, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And basically, prosecutors were trying to get him a 20-year sentence. And, you know, we can discuss the validity of giving teenagers long sentences like that.
Sure.
In the first place, that's fine with me. But people who have committed similar crimes in Texas have gotten at least like 8 years or so.
Right.
You know, someone who committed a crime where he only killed one person who was the same age as this guy
recently
got 8 years, 6 years without parole.
But not going to jail at all doesn't seem like it should be an option.
The option. No.
And that's
and
what
this
happens.
Kid is not only not going to jail, he's getting to go to this like inpatient rehab center in SoCal that costs $500,000 a year that his parents are paying for. Basically, they're just sort of like, oh, we'll just let him spend less time with his parents. We'll just separate him from his parents and everything will be fine.
But
because their defense was that he was raised in a life of such excess that he just didn't know any better than to get drunk, steal beer from Walmart,
and then kill people.
Like, stop, guys.
I mean,
it's created a whole kind of like online discussion, though, because obviously we don't create those same sorts of excuses for poor people.
No.
And they are raised in an environment where this sort of thing happens all the time,
yeah,
a lot of the time.
I know.
You know, that's something that, you know, if you've read the Invisible Child series in the New York Times that I've been talking left, right and center, that's one of the things that's made very clear is like there's this very bright girl who like is very like she wants to do the right thing, she's really smart, and she's in this environment where like both of her parents are recovering crack addicts, and she lives in a homeless shelter where there's violence and sexual assault going on constantly, and she just like she keeps getting pulled from one school to another and one house to another, like she just sort of like has no stability in her life, and she lives in a world where her option, you know, where everyone basically like the people who are from the projects who are living the high life compared to her are like their option is to join a gang.
Right.
You know, her parents are former gang members. Like
yep.
She just sort of like her worldview is entirely informed by this like crazy sort of like subset of New York City society that I, you know,
right.
So, someone who's from like a white middle class neighborhood would never even really come into contact with, even though they live in the same neighborhood.
Right. But because she has that worldview, would it then be okay for her to be killing people as a gang member?
No, of course not.
No.
And not only would it not, she would be getting, in Texas, she'd probably get the fucking death penalty.
Right, like, she would.
Not only would that not be an excuse, and I'm not saying it should be an excuse, you should know better than killing people, but certainly a kid with access to at least the best education opportunities and the sort of like comfiest life opportunities, even with bad parenting, should not be excused from manslaughter and, you know, drunk driving and theft.
Yeah.
Because he was drunk off stolen beer. Also, guys, this is what's wrong with living in Texas. It's boring. This is what people are doing for fun.
Yeah, going to Walmart and stealing beer.
Stealing beer from Walmart and then drunk joyriding around town.
Ugh.
Like, that's life ruining as it is.
Yeah. Don't be doing that.
Exactly. And then we have
Moving on. News.
I don't feel like we should play the Hillary Pillory sound effect for this because I
don't either.
I feel sad about it.
I know. So do I. But this is the Hillary Clinton section.
This is the Hillary Clinton
podcast.
Section. It's not Hillary Pillory.
No.
Because we're only going to minorly pillory her for something that's not that big.
But there was a Des Moines Register poll that was released on Sunday, and she has an 89% favorability rating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Iowa, where I'm now contending, people don't know better.
Was
this poll like, do you like Hillary Clinton or not?
Because
I like her fine.
I was going to say, I might say yes.
Yeah. Like,
if my options were yes or no.
Yes or no. I'm not trying. I don't hate her. I don't want her to be president next.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, let's not read too much into that statistic.
Yeah.
But let's read a lot into the statistic that says that 59% of Republicans find her unfavorable, because that spells problems for the general.
Yes, it does. Big time.
And, you know, nobody has a negative view of the Clintons in the sort of, like, broad sense.
Right.
You know, you can disagree with things that they've stood for. I certainly do. Yeah. But, I mean, that's not a sign that she's the only person who could possibly win a presidential election.
No.
Stop yourself.
No.
But there were some other contenders polled as well.
Yes. So, the Republican side, Paul Ryan is polling with 73% favorability. Mike Huckabee, who won the Iowa caucus, has a 68% favorability rating. And Rick Santorum, who also won the Iowa caucus,
right,
has a 58% favorability rating. So, those are people who, you know, I think all of those people will probably run the next time.
But Brent has a prediction.
I have a prediction, because I have been sort of thinking about this a lot for unknown reasons. I don't know why.
Unknown reasons, just because. Yeah,
Real focused on 2016
exactly.
Already.
So, sue him.
But I am becoming ever more certain that Mike Huckabee is going to be the Republican nominee for president in 2016.
I see it.
That he did not run in 2012 because he specifically wanted to run in 2016. He has already been quoted as saying that, like, he's certainly leaving it open to run in 2016, which, when you're saying that 3 years in advance, means you're doing it.
Right.
I had been reading Game Change, and supposedly the reason that he didn't do it in 2012 was because he it was for monetary reasons, because he'd literally spent so much of his own money in 2008, and that's why he got that show on Fox, because he literally just needed to pay for a house that he was, like, building at the time. And so that's under control, apparently, at this point, you would think.
Good.
And he has sort of all of the things that you would want in a nominee, because I think that he can speak to the crazies, but he can also sort of speak to everyone, because he has this sort of, like, populist tone to him. He's likable in a sense, besides being sort of terrifying.
I remember
and
us
awful,
saying
but
in 2008 that he was sort of like the kind of, like, preferable Republican, just because he was speaking this sort of, like, populist language that was harnessing the Tea Party is a populist movement,
and we've talked about 2016 is going to be the year for that,
exactly.
We think it is anyway.
And we have also said repeatedly that if the Democrats run an insider like Hillary Clinton and the Republicans run a Mike Huckabee, like,
it's
we're not in good territory there.
No, I don't think so either.
And Mike Huckabee, well, I was saying to Brent earlier, he's, like, a populist but also, like, a bigoted wingnut.
Yeah.
So he sort of has all of the things,
like,
you need as a Republican.
Worlds.
Yeah.
Because he'll probably re-win the Iowa caucus.
Right.
He plays well in all of those southern states that have, like,
love
you
him.
Know, then he goes and wins South Carolina.
Exactly.
And I don't know. He's got a great, I was joking with Lila. I was like, he's got a better weight loss story than Chris Christie
right?
does, because he used to be, like, morbidly obese.
Yes. And I had forgotten about that, because I was like, well, he was never as fat. And Brent was like, and I was like, oh, I'd forgotten
that. Don't
you
remember, like, that sort of, like, infamous
yes?
picture of him and his fat
yes.
family, like, at the government mansion when he was the governor of Arkansas,
yes.
where they're all, like, you know, weigh, like, a metric ton.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. And he's kept the weight off in a more successful way.
Although Chris Christie is losing weight.
He is losing weight. But Mike Huckabee's also adorable. He's like a teddy bear.
Yeah, he's likable.
There's nothing threatening about him.
Right,
like,
exactly.
He seems like a nice guy.
Well, what'd you say his resting speaking
his
voice
resting
was?
His resting speaking voice is sort of friendly.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. No, I see Mike Huckabee, and I mean, even, like, I remember in 2008 looking at the Republican field and thinking, like, okay, like, he's a bigoted wingnut, but I think on actual issues, he's probably kind of fine. He's not just, like, cut and sort of, like, you know, an endless cut and, you know, what's the phrase I'm looking for?
I don't know.
I was thinking of tax and spend, but that's the opposite
the
of
opposite
what I'm talking
of that.
About. Yeah. But he's not just
a cut and cut
Republican. He's a guy who sort of, like, has vaguely populist leanings, and I think can sort of bring out the populist part of the Tea Party movement that is sort of inherent in why they were founded. I mean, they were founded because they were angry because we bailed out the banks, basically.
Yeah.
Like, I'm angry about that, too.
But
so,
I,
good. Good
yeah,
work, everybody.
Totally.
We all agree that that kind of economic policy isn't working. He had the most reasonable suggestions of anyone in that 2008 field about what we could be doing about that.
Right.
He just also hated everybody.
Yeah.
So that's a problem, but not as big a problem as, you know, being sort of, as cutting everything.
Right.
And just giving all the money to banks.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's more disastrous, I think, for everyone.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this new pope is really giving us a run for our money.
Right.
If you remember, we wrote, like, an entire essay series on why we hate the Catholic Church.
Right.
All of which still stands. However,
right.
Pope Francis is, like, going at it.
Yeah. Well, he was also the person of the year this week.
Yes.
So maybe he felt like
he needed to really hit home.
Sell
yeah,
that.
There's
yeah.
a bit. I love I love it when someone says something that can get them called a Marxist.
I know.
I can always get behind
yeah.
that.
Well, and that's, yeah.
That's just what he, that's what he did. He said that the that rich people should share their wealth, saying, just as the commandment, thou shalt not kill, sets a clear limit in order to safeguard the value of human life, today we also have to say thou shalt not to an economy of exclusion and inequality. Such an economy kills. Because he was making, he sort of like, he had made a speech about poverty before, and he yeah. sort of like doubled
well,
down on
that's it. That's his big thing.
Poverty. Right. That's what he does. Yeah. That's what he's up to. He said, how can it not be, how can it be that it's not news, a news item when an elderly homeless person dies of exposure, but it is news when the stock market loses 2 points? So now everyone's calling him a Marxist, like you yeah. do when you have some compassion.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited about him because, like, you know, look, there's still, the Catholic Church hasn't changed any of their opinions on sort of
no,
women.
Terrible.
It has, they still remain terrible.
They're the worst.
But what I like about this is, besides just sort of like liking exactly what he said.
Right.
But I mean, I think that it's, I think for so long, just, you know, being a Christian myself, like, I think that just Christianity as a whole has sort of like, you know, taken its eye off of sort of what's
yeah.
important.
And they've been,
and they've been caring to, right, the good things that Christianity does and the Christian Church sometimes does. And the Catholic Church, I mean, does.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've been too concerned about sort of, you know, hating gay people and hating immigrants.
Right. And like making sure women can't have abortions and
right.
like other stuff that's not ultimately part of the message.
So, like, I think that when you have somebody who's leading, you know, the world's biggest church like this talking about this, like, I think it just sort of, again, he's just reframing sort of like what we should be focused on as sort of Christians and also just,
humans.
You know, humans.
Yeah. he also said, I give him kudos for this because, you know, he got called a Marxist and obviously was expected to be like, this is a terrible thing, which he said. He said, Marxist ideology is wrong. But then he said, but I've met many Marxists in my life who are good people, so I don't feel offended.
Yeah,
I felt good about that.
He didn't mind it.
I'm a person who's at times called myself a Marxist. I like to be called a Marxist. I always take it as a compliment if someone calls me a
yeah,
Marxist.
Sure.
That's my favorite thing. But in any case, though Pope Francis still sort of supports all of these annoying things the Catholic Church stands for, like banning abortion and gay marriage and he hates contraception and blah, 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 he's kind of awesome because he's, like, sneaking around Rome in disguise from time to time.
Yeah.
Like, he sneaks out of the Vatican at night to, like, go minister to homeless people or poor people. Or, like,
I love
that's
that.
Funny.
I wonder
and
what
then also, he used to be a bouncer.
Like. Do you think he wears, like, those, you know, glasses
yes,
with
the
fake
with
nose
the
and the mustache? Yeah.
Obviously. That's yeah. what you wear as a disguise. What else are you disguising yourself
I
in?
I don't know.
But, yeah, he worked as a nightclub bouncer as a teenager. I think that's sort of hilarious.
I don't know about that,
he doesn't
by the
seem
way.
Like he would have been an effective bouncer, but...
No.
He knows what it's like to, you know, man the door.
Sure, why not?
He swept floors and ran tests in a chemical lab as a teenager. Got a kind of interesting past. It's better than a past as a member of the Nazi youth.
I was going to say, yeah, totally.
So there's that. And now that I've been to Argentina, I'm feeling really great about Argentina.
Oh, that's
because,
right. Yeah.
So I feel good about it.
Good.
I feel
great about it.
Yeah. Things I don't feel great about are Megyn Kelly just sort of talking on television. Person.
Oh, my God.
On Wednesday, she got herself into some hot water.
Yeah.
She was talking to Aisha Harris, who's a columnist for Slate. And Aisha Harris was talking about how the holidays can be a little bit, like, sort of exclusive for non-white children because all, you know, Santa Claus and all of the kind of, like, mythology that we have built up around the traditions of Christmas are basically, like,
yeah.
featuring white people doing things that are, you know, very white.
Yes.
And that there's not anything, there's no attempt to sort of like diversify this holiday. You never see like, and it's, you know, like there is sort of like a big movement, like a sort of like Black Jesus movement and
yes.
like there's a lot of discussion about Jesus as a figure
yeah.
not being just like a white guy.
Well, because she got in on the Jesus game too, because
exactly.
she also says, I mean, Jesus was a white man too. He was a historical figure. That's a verifiable fact.
Yeah.
As is Santa,
because
who is not a historical figure.
Because Megyn Kelly responded like with this like weird repetitive claim that Santa was a white man, and she just wanted to make sure that everyone knew that. We're talking about the potential that he could be, you know, the potential that, you know, there isn't a black Santa, but
right.
we're not saying he's not white because he is white. Like, she just went on and on about it. It was crazy.
Right. But like, what, you know, sort of rabbit is the Easter bunny, or what?
Right,
I mean, like I just sort of
cares?
Like what color do unicorns come in? I mean,
also,
it's just like what
Santa Claus is not defined by being a white man. Would you be bothered if there was a black depiction of Santa Claus? I'd be like, oh,
certainly Santa initially was white when he was invented. We invented him as a white person. But
when
Montgomery
Ward and Coca-Cola got together and invented Santa Claus, they pictured him as a white man.
Right.
That doesn't mean that he's like that we're somehow like not being true to history if we depict him as some other race.
Right. As
Who cares?
As he doesn't exist.
Right.
He could sort of
he could be anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could be green.
He could be green. No, exactly. Well, as he is a completely secular figure that has nothing to do with anything.
Right.
Like, we just made him the fuck up.
Right. Also, we don't know that Jesus is white.
No, and I was, as I sort of wrote into the doc, like, I doubt that Megyn Kelly would consider Osama bin Laden white, but he was probably about as white as Jesus was, considering they were from the same region of the world. Like, I mean, once you're having to go out of your way to also insist that Jesus was white, which is, unlike Santa Claus, like, a discussion that people have been having for a long time.
Yes.
And a discussion about which there is an entire sort of, like, school of theology sort of, like, you know, there's a big discussion about Jesus as depicted as a white man.
Yeah.
Jesus, whether or not he was actually white. He was a Mediterranean Jew. So that's sort of an irrelevant discussion to be having. Because if we really want to talk about Jesus as a historical figure, we're not really talking about the kind of white man she's picturing.
Right. But her response was sort of hilarious because she said, I offered a tongue-in-cheek message for any kids watching.
Yes.
None of them were watching.
And also there was nothing tongue-in-cheek about what
she said. And then she said, humor is a part of what we try to bring to this show, but sometimes that is lost on the humorless. She wasn't doing a bit.
No, that wasn't a bit. That was an obsessive need to remind people that this fake figure that was the topic of their discussion was a white man, even in being fictional.
Right. But then she also went on to say that it was commercialism and not racism that forced her to declare. This sort of like goes along with the whole Fox War on Christmas situation that happens every year.
This is, and then she accused everyone of race baiting.
Yes.
Like, you know who was race baiting? It's a person who like has, and it was weird because it was like the synapses fired without her even realizing it. Like, Aisha Tyler mentions, was it Aisha Tyler?
But it was Aisha somebody.
It was Aisha Harris. Aisha Tyler is a comedian. Sorry.
Who is black, so she may have had something to say about this.
Well,
that's why
she was brought on to talk about it. Aisha Harris was just sort of like talking about the sort of like, the exclusion of minority children around, from the sort of like traditions of Christmas. But, you know, it's like the same reason that like a holiday like Kwanzaa exists. Because there's nothing exclusive, like there's nothing that inclusive about this sort of like holiday that is all about these sort of like white, you know, fictional figures going and sort of white children get presents or whatever.
It's the same reason why people sort of recently got all up in arms that there hadn't been a black Disney princess.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
It's about minority children being able to see themselves in fictional figures and in pop culture and in culture in general.
Right.
So that's what she was talking about.
Yeah.
She was talking about the fact that like black children don't see themselves in Christmas because
she wasn't claiming that our white depiction of Santa was wrong.
No, exactly. That's, and also she like maybe was suggesting that there's a way to be more inclusive, but like is any Christmas tradition somehow sullied by like depicting Santa as any other race? Like, who the fuck cares?
Nobody.
Nobody cares because it's not a religious belief.
If a white person wants to carry on having their white Santa,
they are free to.
God bless them.
Yeah. But does like Santa Claus's like mythology or job somehow change? And if his race changes, like, no.
No.
That's crazy. Uh-uh. But Megyn Kelly, her reaction was like so immediate and so like weird and awkward. It was so awkward.
I hope the black community just really just goes for it and does change the whole
black
thing.
Santa,
like,
let's
just
do it.
Turn it on its head.
Yeah.
Make a new Santa story.
Exactly.
Make him not come down the chimney. Make him do whatever remake it up. Just to piss Megyn Kelly off.
As if we're so tied to a tradition that was and a story that was created by Coca-Cola and Montgomery
Ward. Not that
Ward
long ago.
Very recently. Yeah. Well, and if you, I mean, like, it's like a very American thing anyway. Like, there are other sort of like Saint Nick type depictions that exist in Europe. But like, he's not wearing the same outfit. He doesn't look like Coca-Cola Santa Claus.
Only one was drinking bottles of Coke.
Exactly. That's right. But like, the whole tradition is an invented tradition that is sort of irrelevant to the holiday. The holiday, Brent's going to disagree with me, is about buying stuff.
Yeah.
It's not about who, what race Santa Claus is.
Well, you heard about what Christmas was about yesterday at my holiday concert.
Oh, God.
My Christmas concert.
I wish I understood. It's about something about, like, the human embodiment of love or something.
So
something
I had a Christmas concert at a church yesterday, yes. And Lila came. Lila, my atheist friend, came with Lauren, right. My Jewish friend.
Yeah.
And there was a point in the concert where the pastor got up and spoke, and sort of, like, as he initially started talking, I was like, yes, he's talking about Christmas. And then there was at one point where, like, I knew exactly what he was talking about, right. But I sort of, like, started processing, like, the way that he was saying it,
yeah.
And I immediately was like, Lila is probably having, like, that moment where she's having to, like, hold it together.
Yeah.
And I looked over at her, and she had her head in, like, in both of her hands, and she was sort of, like, looking off to the side, and I was like, hold it together, hold it together, hold it together, hold it together.
What you missed is the moment that I cracked.
Oh, and I did miss that.
I silently, but very obviously, laughed, like, in front of him, and then I was like, well, I've got to hide my head now. Because what happened was, it wasn't even, like, he sort of, you know how, like, sometimes, you know, I've been to a lot of, like, political events where pastors or somebody have spoken, and I've followed what they were saying, and I've known that they have sort of, like, added a little gaudy flair to it or whatever, but I've basically, like, been on board with what they were saying. But there's some times when you're in a church, and, like, there is a type of, like, church metaphor that is not transferable to non-church members. Like,
sure.
I understood what he was saying.
He was basically talking about, like, the embodiment of the love of Christmas through, like, you know, God made flesh on earth, basically.
Exactly.
It was sort of, like, what he was talking about, which, like, to me, I was like, well, that's what Christmas is.
I heard that, and I was like, well, that is insane. I heard it, and it was like one of the, it reminded me of when I was in Vietnam, because I did a semester of college in Vietnam, and we went to the, like, Museum of the Revolution in Hanoi.
Yeah.
And I went through with a Vietnamese friend, and she explained in the exact same terminology as every other Vietnamese person that we were following through the hall, exactly what each, like, symbolic sculpture meant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, here's, like, a giant, like, wagon. What this represents is the triumph of the human spirit over the harsh realities of the weather. Like, it was all stuff like that. And it was, like, in very consistent but very bizarre and very formal language. And I felt like, I feel like in churches a lot of time that's what happens, where there are these, like, metaphors that get repeated a lot. So if you go to church, you're like, well, yes, the human embodiment of Christ. Well, you know, like, the human embodiment of love is an idea that you would maybe, like, have heard before in a church. But when you come from the outside, it's not that you don't understand what they're saying. It just sounds so patently ridiculous that you're like, and so as soon as he started, like, going in that direction, because it's like in the middle of a Christmas concert where you're just, like, singing, like, jingle bells and, like, something, like, I was sort of, like, on board with what was going on up until then. But I turned around. It was an entire hall. It was me and our friend Lauren, and then an entire hall full of old ladies in Christmas sweaters.
Correct.
Like, very Christmassy Christmas sweaters.
Yeah, it's an older church.
Right. It's a church with a big...
It's in Laguna Woods, which is where they have Leisure World, which is, like, a retirement community that is, like, a medium-sized city.
Yeah.
Basically. There's, like, so I think, like, 50,000 people or something, basically.
It's a very, very old group of people.
Right.
That go to this church. And so I turned around, and I saw them all in their Christmas sweaters nodding earnestly.
There was just, like, one moment. It all came to you at the same time. I just lost it.
I just, like, couldn't. And it didn't help that, like, the pastor was wearing this, like, really ill-fitting Christmas sweater that made him look kind of pregnant.
He wasn't wearing the greatest sweater.
It was the worst sweater. It wasn't just not the greatest sweater. It was the actual worst sweater that he could have been wearing. Like, something about it.
He's such a lovely man, though.
I'm sure he's lovely, except that he had those weird eyes. He had that weird look on his face where he looked a little bit like maybe he was, like, on Valium or something. Like, there's a look that I find goes along with the sort of metaphors. You know,
well,
that is like, it was like he was so happy with his, like, with his God is love metaphor, because that he just sort of, like, it's a look that a lay person has to take Valium to get. People in churches, I think, are just getting this look because they're happy and they're in church.
Yeah.
But it's like a look that I just sort of like there was nothing about his expression or dress that I could, like, sort of hold together in my, like, it just sort of, like, it all fell apart. It fell apart. That's why I don't go to church, guys. I've had this problem in churches before.
I'm sure that you
I will
have.
Say.
Yeah.
I once went to a Easter service in a church, and I just,
well, you still don't know what Easter is.
I don't know what Easter is.
I explain it to you every Easter.
I have already forgotten.
Yeah.
And I could not help hold it together through this Easter service. It sort of, like, took a turn. I don't know.
Yeah.
In any case, it was a good concert, though.
Thank you.
Musically speaking.
Thanks.
And that's the news, I guess.
That's it this week.
Yeah.
Now
that you've heard my war on Christmas.
That's it. Yeah. Keep voting for us on
Vote
Stitcher.
Vote for us on Stitcher.
Again. I'm going to plug it again.
Don't not vote for us.
Nope.
That would be a crazy thing to do.
Yes.
So just instead, consider voting for us.
Yeah. And we've been doing some more active Facebook booking this week, too. So maybe go to the Facebook page.
Go to the Facebook page. Check us out on Twitter.
Have some genius things going on this week.
We have some stuff going on Twitter. We have stuff happening. Stuff's happening.
It's all happening.
So we will
talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.